This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of The Liar by Nora Roberts, performed by January Lavoie. For Joanne, the amazing forever friend. Part 1. The False. It is not the lie that passeth through the mind, but the lie that sinketh in, and settleth in it, that doth the hurt. Francis Bacon. 1. In the big house, and Shelby would always think of it as the big house, she sat in her husband's big leather chair at his big, important desk. The color of the chair was espresso, not brown. Richard had been very exact about that sort of thing. The desk itself, so sleek and shiny, was African zebra wood and custom-made for him in Italy. When she'd said, just a joke, that she didn't know they had zebras in Italy, he'd given her that look. The look that told her, despite the big house, the fancy clothes, and the fat diamond on the third finger of her left hand, she'd always be Shelby Ann Pomeroy, 2 steps out of the bumpkin town in Tennessee where she was born and raised. He'd have laughed once, she thought now. He'd have known she was joking, and laughed as if she were the sparkle in his life. But oh God, she dulled in his eyes, and so fast, too. The man she'd met nearly 5 years before on a starry summer night had swept her off her feet, away from everything she'd known, into worlds she'd barely imagined. He'd treated her like a princess, shown her places she'd only read about in books or seen in movies. And he'd loved her once, hadn't he? It was important to remember that. He'd loved her, wanted her, given her all any woman could ask for. Provided. That was a word he'd often used. He'd provided for her. Maybe he'd been upset when she got pregnant. Maybe she'd been afraid, just for a minute, of the look in his eyes when she told him. But he'd married her, hadn't he? Whisked her off to Las Vegas like they were having the adventure of a lifetime. They'd been happy then. It was important to remember that now, too. She had to remember that. To hold tight the memories of the good times. A woman widowed at 24 needed memories. A woman who learned she'd been living a lie, was not only broke, but in terrible, breathtaking debt, needed reminders of the good times. The lawyers and accountants and tax people explained it all to her, but they might as well have been speaking Greek when they went on about leveraging and hedge funds and foreclosures. The big house, one that had intimidated her since she'd walked in the door, wasn't hers, or not enough hers to matter, but the mortgage companies. The cars, leased, not bought, and with the payments overdue, not hers either. The furniture, bought on credit, and those payments overdue. And the taxes. She couldn't bear to think about the taxes. It terrified her to think of them. In the 2 months and 8 days since Richard's death, it seemed all she did was think about matters he'd told her not to worry about, matters that weren't her concern. Matters, when he'd given her that look, that were none of her business. Now it was all her concern and all her business, because she owed creditors, a mortgage company, and the United States government so much money, it paralyzed her. She couldn't afford to be paralyzed. She had a child. She had a daughter. Callie was all that mattered now. She was only 3, Shelby thought, and wanted to lay her head down on that slick, shiny desk and weep. But you won't. You're what she's got now, so you'll do whatever has to be done. She opened one of the boxes, the one marked personal papers. The lawyers and tax people had taken everything, gone through everything, copied everything, she supposed. Now she would go through everything and see what could be salvaged for Callie. She needed to find enough, somewhere, to provide for her child after she'd paid off all the debt. She'd get work, of course, but it wouldn't be enough. She didn't care about the money, she thought, as she began going through receipts for suits and shoes and restaurants and hotels, for private planes. She'd learned she didn't care about the money after the first whirlwind year, after Callie. After Callie, all she'd wanted was a home. She stopped, looked around Richard's office. The harsh colors of the modern art he'd preferred, the stark white walls he said best showed off that art, and the dark woods and leathers. This wouldn't be home, and hadn't been. Would never be, she thought, if she lived here 80 years instead of the scant 3 months since they'd moved in. He'd bought it without consulting her, furnished it without asking what she'd like. A surprise, he'd said, throwing open the doors to this monster house in Villanova, this echoing building in what he'd claimed was the best of the Philadelphia suburbs. And she'd pretended to love it, hadn't she? Grateful for a settled place, however much the hard colors and towering ceilings intimidated. Callie would have a home, go to good schools, play in a safe neighborhood, make friends. She'd make friends, too. That had been her hope. But there hadn't been time. Just as there wasn't a $10 million life insurance policy. He'd lied about that, too. Lied about the college fund for Callie. Why? She put that question aside. She'd never know the answer, so why ask why? She could take his suits and shoes and ties and his sports equipment, the golf clubs and skis, take all those to consignment shops. Take what she could get there. Take whatever they didn't repossess and sell it. On damn eBay if she had to. Or Craigslist. Or a pawn shop. It didn't matter. Plenty in her own closet to sell. And jewelry, too. She looked at the diamond. The ring he'd slipped on her finger when they got to Vegas. The wedding ring she'd keep, but the diamond she'd sell. There was plenty of her own to sell. For Callie. She went through files one by one. They'd taken all the computers, and those she didn't have back yet. But the actual paper was tangible. She opened his medical file. He'd taken good care of himself, she thought. Which reminded her to cancel the memberships at the country club, at the fitness center. That had gone out of her mind. He'd been a healthy man, one who kept his body in tune, who never missed a checkup. She needed to toss out all those vitamins and supplements he'd taken daily, she decided as she turned over another paper. No reason to keep those. No reason to keep these records either. The healthy man had drowned in the Atlantic, just a few miles off the South Carolina coast, at the age of 33. She should just shred all this. Richard had been big on shredding, and had his own machine right there in the office. Creditors didn't need to see the results of his last routine blood work, or the confirmation of his flu shot from 2 years ago. Paperwork from the emergency room, from when he'd dislocated his finger playing basketball. For God's sake, that had been 3 years ago. For a man who'd shred enough paperwork to make a mountain range, he'd sure been possessive about his medical receipts. She sighed, noting another dated almost 4 years ago. She started to toss it aside, stopped, and frowned. She didn't know this doctor. Of course, they'd been living in that big high-rise in Houston then, and who could keep track of doctors the way they'd moved every year? Sometimes less than that. But this doctor was in New York City. That can't be right, she murmured. Why would Richard go to a doctor in New York for a... Everything went cold. Her mind, her heart, her belly. Her fingers trembled as she lifted the paper, brought it closer as if the words would change with the distance. But they stayed the same. Richard Andrew Foxworth had elective surgery performed by Dr. Deepak Haryana at Mount Sinai Medical Center on July 12, 2011. A vasectomy. He'd had a vasectomy without telling her. Callie barely 2 months old, and he'd fixed it so there could be no more children. He'd pretended to want more when she'd begun talking about another. He'd agreed to get checked as she got checked when, after a year of trying, she hadn't conceived. She could hear him now.
"You've just got to relax, Shelby, for God's sake. If you're worried and tense about it, it'll never happen."
"No, it'll never happen, because you fixed it so it couldn't. You lied to me. Even about that. Lied when my heart broke every month. How could you? How could you?" She pushed away from the desk, pressed her fingers to her eyes. July. Mid-July, and Callie about 8 weeks old. A business trip, he'd said. That's right. She remembered very well. To New York. Hadn't lied about the where. She hadn't wanted to take the baby to the city. He'd known she wouldn't. He'd made all the arrangements, another surprise for her. He'd sent her back to Tennessee on a private plane, her and her baby. So she could spend some time with her family, he'd said. Show off the baby, let her mother and grandmother spoil her and spoil Callie for a couple of weeks. She'd been so happy. So grateful, she thought now. And all the while, he'd just been getting her out of the way so he could make certain he didn't father another child. She walked back to the desk, picked up the photo she'd had framed for him. One of her and Callie, taken by her brother Clay on that very trip. A thank you gift he'd seemed to value as he'd kept it on his desk, wherever they'd been, ever since.
"Another lie. Just another lie. You never loved us. You couldn't have lied and lied and lied if you'd loved us."
On the rage of betrayal, she nearly smashed the frame on the desk. Only the face of her baby stopped her. She set it down again, as carefully as she might priceless and fragile porcelain. Then she lowered to the floor. She couldn't sit behind that desk. Not now. She sat on the floor with harsh colors against hard white walls, rocking, weeping. Weeping not because the man she'd loved was dead, but because he never existed. There was no time to sleep. Though she disliked coffee, she made herself an oversized mug from Richard's Italian machine and hit it with a double shot of espresso. Headachy from the crying jag, wired up on caffeine, she combed through every paper in the box, making piles. Hotel and restaurant receipts, when viewed with newly opened eyes, told her he hadn't just lied, but had cheated. Room service charges too high for a man alone. Add a receipt for a silver bangle from Tiffany's, which he'd never given to her, from the same trip. Another 5,000 at La Perla, the lingerie he preferred she wear, from another trip, a receipt for a weekend spent in a bed and breakfast in Vermont, when he'd said he was going to finalize a deal in Chicago, and it began to solidify. Why had he kept all this proof of his lies and infidelity? Because, she realized, she'd trusted him. Not even that, she thought. Accepting. She'd suspected an affair, and he'd likely known she had. He kept it because he'd thought her too obedient to poke through his personal records. And she had been. The other lives he'd lived, he'd locked away. She hadn't known where to find the key, would never have questioned him, and he'd known it. How many other women, she wondered. Did it matter? One was too many, and any of them would have been more sophisticated, more experienced and knowledgeable than the girl from the little mountain town in Tennessee he'd knocked up when she was 19, dazzled and foolish. Why had he married her? Maybe he'd loved her, at least a little, wanted her. But she hadn't been enough, not enough to keep him happy, keep him true. And did that matter, really? He was dead. Yes, she thought. Yes, it mattered. He'd made a fool of her, left her humiliated, left her with a financial burden that could hound her for years and jeopardize their daughter's future. It damn well mattered. She spent another hour going systematically through the office. The safe had already been cleared. She'd known about it, though she hadn't had the combination. She'd given the lawyers permission to have it opened. They'd taken most of the legal documents, but there was $5,000 in cash. She took it out, set it aside. Callie's birth certificate, their passports. She opened Richard's, studied his photo. So handsome. Smooth and polished, like a movie star, with his rich brown hair and tawny eyes. She'd so wished Callie had inherited his dimples. She'd been so charmed by those damn dimples. She set the passports aside. However unlikely it was she'd use hers or Callie's, she'd pack them up. She'd destroy Richard's, or maybe ask the lawyers if that's what she should do. She found nothing hidden away, but she'd go through everything again before she shredded or filed it all away again in packing boxes. Hyped on coffee and grief, she walked through the house, crossed the big two-story foyer, took the curving stairs up, the thick socks she wore soundless on the hardwood. She checked on Callie first, went into the pretty room, leaned down to kiss her daughter's cheek before tucking the blankets around her little girl's favored button-the-air sleeping position. Leaving the door open, she walked down the hall to the master suite. She hated the room, she thought now. Hated the gray walls, the black leather headboard, the sharp lines of the black furniture. She hated it more now, knowing she'd made love with him in that bed after he'd made love with other women in other beds. As her belly twisted, she realized she needed to go to the doctor herself. She needed to be sure he hadn't passed anything on to her. "Don't think now," she told herself. "Just make the appointment tomorrow, and don't think now." She went to his closet, one nearly as big as the whole of the bedroom she'd had back in Rendezvous Ridge back home. Some of the suits had barely been worn, she thought. Armani, Versace, Cucinelli. Richard had leaned toward Italian designers for suits. And shoes, she thought, taking a pair of black Ferragamo loafers off the shoe shelf, turning them over to study the soles. Barely scuffed. Moving through, she opened a cupboard, took out suit bags. She'd take as many as she could manage to the consignment shop in the morning. "Should have done it already," she muttered. But first, there'd been shock and grief, then the lawyers, the accountants, the government agent. She went through the pockets of a gray pinstripe to be certain they were empty, transferred it to the bag. 5 a bag, she calculated. 4 bags for the suits, then another 5, maybe 6, for jackets and coats. Then shirts, casual pants. The mindless work kept her calm. The gradual clearing of space lightened her heart a little. She hesitated when she got to the dark bronze leather jacket. He'd favored it, had looked so good in the aviator style and the rich color. It was, she knew, one of the few gifts she'd given him that he'd really liked. She stroked one of the sleeves, buttery soft, supple, and nearly gave in to the sentiment to set it aside, keep it, at least for a while. Then she thought of the doctor's receipt and dug ruthlessly through the pockets. Empty, of course. He'd been careful to empty his pockets every night, toss any loose change in the glass dish on his dresser. Phone in the charger, keys in the dish by the front door or hung in the cabinet in his office. Never left anything in pockets to weigh them down, spoil the line, be forgotten. But as she gave the pockets a squeeze, a habit she'd picked up from her mother on washing day, she felt something. She checked the pocket again, found it empty. Pushed her fingers in again, turned the pocket inside out. A little hole in the lining, she noted. Yes, he had favored the jacket. She carried the jacket back into the bedroom, got her manicure scissors out of her kit. Carefully, she widened the hole, telling herself she'd stitch it up later, before she bagged it for sale. Slipping her fingers in the opening, she drew out a key. Not a door key, she thought, turning it in the light. Not a car key. A bank box. But what bank? And what was in it? Why have a bank box when he had a safe right in his office? She should probably tell the lawyers, she thought. But she wasn't going to. For all she knew, he had a ledger in there listing all the women he'd slept with in the past 5 years, and she'd had enough humiliation. She'd find the bank and the box and see for herself. They could take the house, the furniture, the cars, the stocks, bonds, money that hadn't been nearly what Richard had told her. They could take the art, the jewelry, the chinchilla jacket he'd given her for their first and last Christmas in Pennsylvania. But she'd hold on to what was left of her pride. She woke from shivery, disturbing dreams to the insistent tugging on her hand.
Mama. 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 Wake up.
What? She didn't even open her eyes, just reached down, pulled her little girl onto the bed with her, snuggled right in.
Morning time,
Callie sang it.
Fifi's hungry.
Fifi, Callie's desperately beloved stuffed dog, always woke hungry.
Okay.
But she snuggled another minute. At some point, she'd stretched out, fully clothed, on top of the bed, pulled the black cashmere throw over herself, and dropped off. She'd never convince Callie, or Fifi, to cuddle up for another hour, but she could stall for a few minutes.
Your hair smells so good,
Shelby murmured.
Callie's hair. Mama's hair.
Shelby smiled at the tug on hers.
Just the same.
The deep golden red had passed down from her mother's side, from the McNee side, as had the nearly unmanageable curls, which, as Richard preferred, the sleek and smooth, she'd had blown out and straightened every week.
Callie's eyes. Mama's eyes.
Callie pulled Shelby's eye open with her fingers, the same deep blue eyes that read almost purple in some lights.
Just the same,
Shelby began, then winced when Callie poked at her eye.
Red.
I bet. What does Fifi want for breakfast?
5 more minutes, Shelby thought. Just 5.
Fifi wants candy.
The utter glee in her daughter's voice had Shelby opening her bloodshot blue eyes.
Is that so, Fifi?
Shelby turned the plush, cheerful face on the pink poodle in her direction.
Not a chance.
She rolled Callie over, tickled her ribs, and, despite the headache, reveled in the joyful squeals.
Breakfast it is.
She scooped Callie up.
Then we've got places to go, my little fairy queen, and people to see.
Marta? Is Marta coming?
No, baby.
She thought of the nanny Richard had insisted on.
Remember how I told you Marta can't come anymore?
Yike, Daddy,
Callie said, as Shelby carried her downstairs.
Not exactly, but I'm going to fix us a fabulous breakfast. You know what's almost as good as candy for breakfast?
Cake!
Shelby laughed. Close. Pancakes.
Puppy dog pancakes.
With a giggle, Callie laid her head on Shelby's shoulder.
I love Mama.
I love Callie,
Shelby replied, and promised herself she'd do whatever she had to do to give Callie a good, secure life. After breakfast, she helped her daughter dress, bundled them both up. She'd enjoyed the snow at Christmas, had barely noticed it in January, after Richard's accident. But now it was March, and she was thoroughly sick of it, and the bitter air that showed no sign of thawing. But it was warm enough in the garage to settle Callie into her car seat, to haul all the heavy garment bags into the sleek-lined SUV she probably wouldn't have much longer. She'd need to find enough money to buy a second-hand car. A good, safe, child-friendly car. A minivan, she thought, as she backed out of the garage. She drove carefully. The roads here had been well plowed, but winter did its damage, however exclusive the neighborhood, and there were potholes. She didn't know anyone here. The winter had been so harsh, so cold, her circumstances so overwhelming, she'd stayed in more than going out. And Callie caught that nasty cold. The cold, Shelby remembered, that had kept them home when Richard took the trip to South Carolina. The trip that was supposed to be a family winter break. They would have been with him on the boat. And hearing her daughter chattering to Fifi, it didn't bear thinking about. Instead, she concentrated on negotiating traffic and finding the consignment shop. She transferred Callie to her stroller and, cursing the biting wind, dragged the top three bags out of the car. As she fought to open the shop door, keep the bags from sliding, and block Callie from the worst of the wind, a woman pulled open the door.
Oh, wow! Let me give you a hand. Thank you. They're a little heavy, so I've got them. Macy! Treasure trove!
Another woman, this one very pregnant, stepped out from a back room.
Good morning. Well, hello, cutie,
she said to Callie.
You got a baby in your tummy.
Yes, I do.
Laying a hand over it, Macy smiled at Shelby.
Welcome to Second Chances. Do you have some things for us to consider?
I do.
A quick glance around showed Shelby racks and shelves of clothes and accessories, and a very tiny area dedicated to men's clothes. Her hopes sank.
I haven't had a chance to come in before, so I wasn't sure what you... Most of what I brought in are suits. Men's suits and shirts and jackets.
We don't get nearly enough menswear.
The woman who'd let her in tapped the garment bags she'd laid on a wide counter.
Is it all right to take a look?
Yes, please.
You're not from around here,
Macy commented.
Oh, no, I guess not.
Are you visiting?
I live here in Villanova right now, just since December, but...
Oh, my goodness, these are gorgeous suits. Pristine condition so far, Macy.
Size, Cheryl?
42 regular, and there must be 20 of them.
22, Shelby said, and linked her fingers together. I have more in the car.
More?
Both women said together.
Shoes, men's size 10, and coats and jackets and... My husband...
Daddy's clothes,
Callie announced, when Cheryl hung another suit on a holding rack.
Don't touch Daddy's clothes with sticky hands.
That's right, baby. You see,
Shelby began, looking for the right way to explain. Callie solved it for her.
My daddy went to heaven.
I'm so sorry.
One hand on her belly, Macy reached out, touched Callie's arm.
Heaven's pretty,
Callie told them.
Angels live there.
That's absolutely right.
Macy glanced at Cheryl, nodded.
Why don't you go out, get the rest, she told Shelby. You can leave. What's your name, cutie?
Callie Rose Foxwolf. This is Fifi.
Hello, Fifi. We'll watch Callie and Fifi while you bring the rest in.
If you're sure. She hesitated, then asked herself why two women, one of them about 7 months along, would run off with Callie in the time it took her to get to the car and back.
I'll only be a minute. Callie, you be good. Mama's just getting something out of the car.
They were nice, Shelby thought later, as she drove off to try local banks. People were usually nice if you gave them the chance to be. They'd taken everything, and she knew they'd taken more than maybe they might have, but Callie had charmed them.
You're my lucky charm, Callie Rose.
Callie grinned around the straw of her juice box, but kept her eyes glued to the backseat DVD screen and her 10 millionth viewing of Shrek. 2. 6 banks later, Shelby decided the luck may have run out for the day, and her baby needed lunch and a nap. Once she had Callie fed, washed, and tucked in, and the tucking in part always took twice as long as she hoped, she geared up to face the answering machine and the voicemail on her cell phone. She'd worked out payment plans with the credit card companies and felt they'd been as decent as she could expect. She'd done the same with the IRS. The mortgage lender had agreed to a short sale, and one of the messages was from the realtor wanting to set up the first showings. She could have used a nap herself, but there was a lot she could get done in the hour, if God was kind. Callie slept. Because it made the most sense, she used Richard's office. She'd closed up most of the rooms in the big house, cut the heat back wherever she could. She wished for a fire, glanced at the black and silver gas insert under the black marble mantel. The one thing she'd enjoyed in the overwhelming house was being able to have a fire, the warmth and cheer of it at the flick of a switch. But that flick cost money, and she wouldn't spend it just to have gas flames when the sweater and thick socks kept her warm enough. She got out the list she'd made, what had to be done, called the realtor back, agreed to the open house on Saturday and Sunday. She'd take Callie off somewhere, get them both out and leave that business to the realtor. Meanwhile, she dug out the name of the company the lawyers had given her that might buy the furniture so she could avoid repossession. If she couldn't sell it in a swoop, or at least a good chunk of it, she'd try doing pieces online, if she ever had access to a computer again. If she couldn't get enough, she'd have to face the humiliation of having it repossessed. She didn't think the neighborhood ran to yard sales, and it was too damn cold anyway. Then she returned the calls from her mother, her grandmother, her sister-in-law, and asked them to tell the aunts and cousins who'd also called that she was fine. Callie was fine. She was just real busy getting everything in order. She couldn't tell them. Not all of it. Not yet. They knew some, of course, and some was all she could share right that minute. Talking about it made her angry and weepy, and she had too much to do. To keep busy, she went up to the bedroom, sorted through her jewelry. Her engagement ring, the diamond earrings Richard had given her for her 21st birthday, the emerald pendant he'd given her when Callie was born. Other pieces, other gifts. His watches, 6 of them, and his army of cufflinks. She made a careful list, as she had with the clothes she'd taken to the consignment shop. She bagged the jewelry with their appraisals and insurance information, then used her phone to search for a jewelry store, as local as she could manage, that bought as well as sold. With the boxes she'd picked up while they'd been out, she began packing up what she considered hers and important to her. Photographs, gifts to her from family. The realtor had advised her to depersonalize the house, so Shelby would do just that. When Callie woke from her nap, Shelby kept her entertained by giving her little tasks. As she packed, she cleaned. No more housekeeping staff to scrub and polish the endless miles of tile, of hardwood, of chrome, of glass. She made dinner, ate what she could. She dealt with bath time, story time, bedtime, then packed more, hauled boxes to the garage. Exhausted, she treated herself to a hot bath in the soaking tub with its soothing jets, then crawled into bed with her pad, intending to write out the next day's agenda, and fell asleep with the lights on. The next morning, she headed out again with Callie and Fifi and Shrek and Richard's leather attaché case holding her jewelry and its paperwork, his watches and cufflinks. She tried three more banks, widening her area, then, reminding herself that she had no room for pride, parked in front of the jewelry store. She dealt with a three-year-old cranky at having her movie interrupted again, and bribed Callie into submission with the promise of a new DVD. Telling herself it was business, just dollars and cents, she pushed Callie into the shop. Everything shone and seemed as hushed as a church between services. She wanted to turn around and go, just go, but made herself move forward to the woman wearing a sharp black suit and tasteful gold earrings. "Excuse me, I'd like to talk to someone about selling some jewelry."
"You can speak to anyone here.
Selling jewelry is what we do."
"No, ma'am. I mean to say, I'm selling. I'd like to sell some pieces. It says you buy jewelry, too."
"Of course." The woman's eye was as sharp as the suit and carved Shelby down top to toe. Maybe she wasn't looking her best, Shelby thought. Maybe she hadn't been able to camouflage the dark circles under her eyes. But if there was one thing her granny had taught her, it was that when a customer came into your place, you treated them with respect. Shelby stiffened a spine that wanted to buckle, kept her eyes direct.
"Is there someone I should speak to, or would you rather I take my business somewhere else?"
"Do you have the original receipts for the pieces you're interested in selling?"
"No, I don't. Not for all, as some were gifts. But I have the appraisals and the insurance papers. Do I look like a thief? One hauling her daughter around fancy jewelry stores, trying to sell stolen merchandise?"
She felt a scene rising up in her, a dam ready to burst and flood, hot and wild over everything in its path. Perhaps the clerk sensed it as she stepped back.
"One moment, please."
"Mama, I want to go home."
"Oh, baby, so do I. We will. We'll go home soon."
"May I help you?"
The man who stepped up looked like somebody's dignified grandfather, the sort in a Hollywood movie about rich people who'd been rich forever.
"Yes, sir. I hope so. It says you buy jewelry, and I have some jewelry I need to sell."
"Of course. Why don't we go over here? You can sit down, and I'll take a look."
"Thank you."
She struggled to keep that spine straight as she crossed the shop to an ornate desk. He pulled out a chair for her, and the gesture made her want to blubber like a fool.
"I have some pieces my husband gave me. I have the appraisals and all that, the paperwork."
She fumbled open the attaché, took out pouches and jewelry boxes, the manila envelope holding the appraisals. She broke off, closed her eyes, drew a couple of breaths.
"I'm sorry. I've never done this.
It's perfectly all right, Mrs.
Foxworth. I'm Shelby Foxworth.
Wilson Brown.
He took her offered hand, shook it gently.
Why don't you show me what you have, Mrs. Foxworth?
She decided to go with the biggest straight off and opened the pouch that held her engagement ring. He set it on a velvet cloth, and as he took out a jeweler's loop, she opened the envelope.
It says here, it's 3.5 carats, emerald cut, a D grade, that's supposed to be good from what I read, and with 6 side stones in a platinum setting. Is that right?
He looked up from the loop.
Mrs. Foxworth, I'm afraid this is a man-made diamond.
I'm sorry?
It's a lab diamond, as are the side stones.
She put her hands under the desk so he couldn't see them shake.
That means it's fake.
It simply means it was created in a lab. It's a very nice example of a man-made diamond.
Callie began to whine. Shelby heard the sound through the throbbing in her head, automatically dug in her bag, pulled out the toy phone.
You call Granny, baby. Tell her what you've been up to.
It means, she continued, this isn't a D-grade diamond, and this ring isn't worth what it says here on this paper. It isn't worth $155,000.
No, my dear, it's not.
His voice was as gentle as a pat and made it worse.
I can give you the names of other appraisers so you can ask for other opinions.
You're not lying to me.
I know you're not lying to me. But Richard had, over and over and over. She wouldn't break down, she told herself. Not now. Not here.
Would you look at the rest, Mr. Brown? Tell me if they're fake, too?
Of course.
The diamond earrings were real, and that was all. She'd liked them because they were pretty, and they were simple. Just studs that didn't make her feel awkward in the wearing. But she'd prized the emerald pendant because he'd given it to her the day they brought Callie home from the hospital. And it was as false as he'd been.
I can give you $5,000 for the diamond studs, if you'd still like to sell them.
Yes, thank you. That'd be just fine. Can you tell me where I should take the rest? Is it best to go to a pawn shop? Do you know of a good one? I don't want to take Callie into some place that's, you know what I mean, sketchy. And maybe, if you don't mind, you could give me an idea what it's all really worth.
He sat back, studied her.
The engagement ring is good work, and as I said, a good example of a lab diamond. I could give you $800 for it.
Shelby studied him in turn as she pulled off the matching wedding ring.
How much for the set?
She didn't break down, and she walked out with $15,600. Richard's cufflinks weren't fake, and had given her what she thought of as a bonus. $15,600 was more than she'd had. Not enough to pay off debts, but more than she'd had. And he'd given her the name of another shop that would look at Richard's watches. She stretched her luck with Callie, tried 2 more banks, then gave it up for another day. Callie picked a My Little Pony DVD, and Shelby bought herself a laptop and a couple of flash drives. An investment, she justified, a tool she needed to keep everything straight. Business, she reminded herself. She wouldn't think of the fake jewelry as another betrayal, but as something that gave her some breathing room. She spent nap time creating a spreadsheet, entered the jewelry, the payment for it, canceled the insurance policy, and that would help her expenses. The utilities on the big house, even with rooms closed off, were a killer, but the money from the jewelry would help there. She remembered the wine cellar Richard had been so proud of, hauled the laptop down and began to catalog the bottles. Somebody would buy them. And what the hell? She'd splurge on a bottle for herself, have a glass with her dinner. She selected a bottle of Pinot Grigio. She'd learned a little about wines in the last 4.5 years, and at least knew what she liked. She thought it would go just fine with chicken and dumplings, a Cali favorite. By the time the day was done, she felt more in control, especially when she found $5,000 tucked into one of the cashmere socks in Richard's drawer. $20,000 now in the fund for cleaning up the mess and starting over. Lying in bed, she studied the key. Where do you fit? And what will I find? I'm not giving up. She could maybe hire a private detective. It would likely take a good chunk of that cleaning up fund, but might be the sensible thing to do. She'd give it a few more days, try some banks closer to the city. Maybe go into the city. The next day, she added $35,000 on the sale of Richard's collection of watches and $2,300 more for his golf clubs, skis, and tennis racket. It so boosted her mood that she took Callie for pizza between banks. Maybe she could afford that detective now. Maybe that's what she'd do. But she needed to buy a minivan, and her research told her that purchase would take a deep chunk of her $58,000. Plus, it was only right she use some of that to bump up the payments on the credit cards. She'd work on selling the wine, that's what she'd do, and hire the detective that way. For now, she'd just check one more bank on the way home. Rather than haul out the stroller, she propped Callie on her hip. Callie got that look in her eye, half stubborn, half sulky.
Don't want to, Mama.
Me either, but this is the last one. Then we're going to go home and play dress-up tea party. You and me, baby.
I want to be the princess.
As you wish, Your Highness.
She carried her now giggling daughter into the bank. Shelby knew the routine now, walked to the shortest line to wait her turn. She couldn't keep hauling Callie around this way, every day disrupting routine, in and out of the car. Hell, she felt pretty damn stubborn and sulky herself, and she wasn't 3.5 years old. She'd make this the last one after all. The very last altogether, and start seriously researching private investigators. The furniture would sell, and the wine would sell. It was time for optimism instead of constant worry. She shifted Callie on her hip, approached the teller who glanced at her over the tops of red-framed cheaters.
Can I help you?
Yes, ma'am. I need to speak with a manager. I'm Mrs. Richard Foxworth, and I have a power of attorney here. I lost my husband last December.
I'm very sorry.
Thank you. I believe he had a safe deposit box in this bank. I have the key here, and the power of attorney.
Much quicker than fumbling around, she'd learned, telling bored bank people she'd found the key and didn't know what it went to.
Mrs. Babington's in her office and should be able to help you. Straight across to the left.
Thanks.
She went across, found the office, knocked on the open glass door.
I beg your pardon, ma'am. They said I should speak to you about getting into my husband's safe deposit box.
She walked straight in, something else she'd learned, sat with Callie on her lap.
I have the power of attorney here and the key. I'm Mrs. Richard Foxworth.
Let me check on this. You have such pretty red hair, she said to Callie.
Mama's.
Callie reached up to grab a hank of Shelby's.
Yes, just like your mother's. You're not listed on Mr. Foxworth's box.
I'm sorry?
I'm afraid we don't have a signature card for you.
He has a box here?
Yes. Even with the POA, it would be best if Mr. Foxworth came in personally. He could add you on.
He can't. He was...
Daddy had to go to heaven.
Oh, Babington's face radiated sympathy. I'm very sorry.
Angels sing in heaven. Mama, Fifi wants to go home now.
Soon, baby. Richard, there was an accident. He was in a boat and there was a squall. In December, December 28th. I have the documentation. They don't issue a death certificate when they can't find... I understand. I need to see your paperwork, Mrs. Foxworth, and some photo ID. I brought my marriage license, too, just so you'd have everything. And the police report on when it happened. And these letters from the lawyers. Shelby handed it all over, held her breath. You could get a court order for access. Is that what I should do? I could ask Richard's lawyers, well, my lawyers now, I guess, to do that. Give me a moment here. Babington read over the paperwork while Callie shifted restlessly in Shelby's lap.
I want my tea party, Mama. You said, I want my tea party.
That's what we'll do soon as we're done here. We'll have a princess tea party. You should think about what dolls you're going to invite.
Callie began to list them off, and Shelby realized the nerves of waiting gave her a sudden and urgent need to pee.
The POA's in order, as is the rest of your documentation. I'll show you to the box. Now? If you'd rather come back another time. No, I appreciate it so much.
So much that she felt breathless and a little giddy.
I've never done this before. I don't know what I should do.
I'll walk you through it.
I'll need your signature. Just let me print this out.
It sounds like you'll have a lot of guests at your tea party, she said to Callie as she worked. I have a granddaughter about your age. She loves tea parties.
She can come.
I bet she'd love to, but she lives in Richmond, Virginia, and that's pretty far away. If you'd sign this, Mrs. Foxworth.
She could barely read it the way her thoughts were racing around in her head.
Babington used a swipe card and a passcode, accessed a kind of vault where the walls were filled with numbered drawers. Number 512.
I'm going to step out, give you some privacy. If you need any help, just let me know.
Thank you very much. Am I allowed to take what's in it?
You're authorized.
Take your time, she added, and drew a curtain to block off the room.
Well, I have to say, holy S-H-I-T.
She set the big bag she used for Callie's things and her own and Richard's attaché on a table, then, clutching her daughter, stepped to the box.
Too tight, Mama.
Sorry. God, I'm nervous. It's probably just a bunch of papers he didn't want in the house. It's probably nothing. It may even be empty.
So open it, for God's sake, she ordered herself. With an unsteady hand, she slid the key into the lock, turned it, even jumped a little when it clicked open.
Here we go. Doesn't matter if it's empty. The important thing is I found it. On my own. I did it myself. I've got to set you down a minute, baby. You stay right here. You stay right here with me.
She set Callie on the floor, pulled out the box, put it on the table, then simply stared.
Oh, God. Holy shit.
Shit, Mama.
Don't say that. I shouldn't have said that.
She had to brace a hand on the table. It wasn't empty. And the first thing that caught her eye was a stack of banded money. $100 bills.
$10,000 each. And oh, God, Callie, there's so many of them.
Now her hands weren't just unsteady, but shook as she counted the stacks.
There's 25 of them. There's $250,000 cash money in here.
Feeling like a thief, she flicked an anxious look at the curtain, then shoved the money into the attaché. I have to ask the lawyers what to do. About the money, she thought. But what about the rest? What about the 3 driver's licenses with Richard's photo? And someone else's name? And the passports? And the 32 semi-automatic? She started to reach for the gun, pulled her hand back. She wanted to leave it, couldn't say why she didn't want to touch it. But she made herself lift it, remove the magazine. She'd grown up in the Tennessee mountains with brothers, one who was now a cop. She knew how to handle a gun, but she wasn't carrying a loaded gun with Callie around. She placed it and the 2 extra mags in the attaché. She took the passports, the licenses, discovered social security cards under the same 3 names, American Express cards, visas, all under those names. Was any of it real? Had any of it ever been real?
Mama, let's go, let's go.
Callie tugged on her pants. In a second.
Now, Mama, now.
In a second. The tone, sharp and firm, might have had Callie's lip quivering, but sometimes a child had to be reminded that she didn't run the show. And a mama had to remember that a 3-year-old had a right to get tired of being hauled all over creation and back every damn day. She bent, kissed the top of Callie's head. I'm almost done. I just have to put this back now. Callie was real, Shelby thought. That's what mattered. The rest? She'd figure it out. Or she wouldn't. But Callie was real, and over $200,000 would buy a decent minivan, pay off some of the debt, maybe squeeze out enough for a down payment on a little house once she got steady work. Maybe Richard hadn't meant to, and she didn't know what it all meant, but he'd provided for his daughter's future after all. And he'd given her room to breathe, so she'd think about the rest later. She hauled Callie up, shouldered the bag, gripped the attaché as if her life depended on it. Okay, baby girl, let's go have a tea party. 3. She opened up all the rooms, turned the heat back up, even switched on the fireplaces, all 7 of them. She bought fresh flowers, baked cookies. The time spent on her laptop researching the best way to sell a house, and fast, had suggested cookies, flowers, and as the realtor had decreed, depersonalizing. Keep it all neutral. As far as she was concerned, the place was as neutral as they came. She didn't find the big house welcoming, but then she never had. Maybe with softer furnishings, warmer colors, it might have felt like a home. But that was her sensibility, and hers didn't matter. The sooner she unloaded the damn place, the sooner that section of the crushing debt lifted off her shoulders. The realtor arrived armed with flowers and cookies, so Shelby figured she could have saved her time and money there. She'd brought what she called a staging team with her, and they swarmed around, changing the placement of furniture, displaying more flowers, lighting candles. Shelby had picked up a 12 scented candles, but decided she'd keep that to herself, just return them or keep them, depending on what seemed best when this was all said and done. The place is immaculate. The realtor beamed at Shelby, gave her a congratulatory pat on the shoulder. Your cleaning crew did a terrific job. Shelby thought of her midnight scrubbings and polishings and only smiled. I want it to show well. Believe me, it does. Short sales can be tricky and will put some potential buyers off, but I'm confident we're going to get offers, good ones, and quickly. I hope you're right. I wanted to say, I've got someone coming in Monday morning to see about the furniture, but if anyone who comes in is interested in buying it, any of it, I'm going to price it to sell. That's excellent. There are so many wonderful pieces. I'll make sure we let people know.
She took a last critical look around herself, thought of the gun, the papers, the cash she'd locked in the safe in Richard's office. Then she hefted the big bag she habitually carried.
Callie and I are going to get out of the way. I have errands to run.
And a minivan to buy. Her daddy might not have approved that she didn't buy American, but the 5-year-old Toyota she'd found through CarMax got high ratings on safety and reliability. And the price was right. The price got better when she made herself haggle, offering cash. Real cash. Her hands wanted to shake as she counted it out. Half now, the rest when she picked the car up the next afternoon. But she bore down hard. Maybe she had to pull over 3 blocks away, rest her forehead on the wheel. She'd never in her life spent so much money in one place. Never in her life bought a car. Now she let herself shake, but it wasn't from nerves. No, not now. It was from stunning delight. Shelby Ann Pomeroy, because that's who she was down into it, whatever the legal papers said, had just bought a 2010 Toyota minivan in happy cherry red. By herself. On her own. And had shaved $1,000 off the deal because she hadn't been afraid to ask for it.
"We're going to be fine, Callie," she said,
though her daughter was deep in her Shrek zone.
"We're going to be just fine."
She used her cell, called the leasing company, and arranged for them to pick up the SUV. And, bearing down again, made herself ask for a ride to pick up the minivan. Might as well deal with the insurance while she was at it, and Callie was in her zone. She'd just consider the SUV her office temporarily. Once she arranged for the car insurance to be transferred, she checked the online site where she'd listed the wine for sale.
"Oh my goodness, Callie! We've got bids!"
Delighted, fascinated, she scrolled through, adding in her head, and found over $1,000 already bid.
"I'm going to put another 12 bottles up tonight. That's just what I'm going to do."
Since it seemed her luck was running hot, she geared herself up for the drive into Philadelphia. Even with the GPS, she made 3 wrong turns, had her belly knotted by the traffic. But she found the fur shop, hauled the never-worn chinchilla and her daughter inside. To her surprise, no one looked at her like she was pathetic or made her feel small for returning the coat. And that carved away a major chunk from a credit card, knocking the principal down to not quite as scary and lowered the painful interest rate. She'd sat frozen for too long, Shelby admitted, and treated her little girl to a Happy Meal. Way, way too long. She'd broken the ice now, and damn it, she intended to make a flood. She waited until she was out of the city again, gassed up the car, cursed the cold and the price of gas, then drove aimlessly for a while as Callie had fallen asleep. Twice she drove by her own house, or the lender's house, and kept going when she counted the cars out in front. That was good. Of course that was good. Anyone who came to look at the house could be the one to buy it. But God, she just wanted to take Callie back, settle in, work on her accounting spreadsheet. She stalled long enough so just the realtor waited.
"Sorry, give me 1 minute," Shelby said on the run. "Callie really needs to pee."
They made it. Just barely. When she went back out to the great room, the realtor sat working on her tablet.
"We had a very successful open house. Over 50 people, and this time of year, that's excellent. We had a lot of interest and 2 offers."
"Offers?" Stunned, Shelby set Callie down.
"Low offers, and I don't think the lender's going to accept, but it's a good start. And we have a family of 4 very interested. I have a good feeling about them. They're going to talk it over and get back to me."
"That's terrific.
I also have an offer on your master bedroom suite. One of the lookers brought her sister, and while the sister isn't in the market for a house, she is for furniture. The offer's a little low, in my opinion, and she'd want it right away, Monday at the latest.
Sold.
The realtor laughed, then blinked in surprise when she realized Shelby meant it. Shelby, I haven't even told you her offer.
It doesn't matter. I hate that furniture. I hate every stick of furniture in this house.
Except for Callie's room, she amended, pushing at her hair as her daughter pulled out the basket of toys Shelby kept in one of the base kitchen cabinets.
It's the only one where I picked everything out myself.
She can come haul it away tonight for all I care. There are plenty of other places to sleep in here.
Can we sit down?
I'm sorry, of course. I'm sorry, Miss Tinnisdale. I'm a little wound up, is all.
I told you to call me Donna.
Donna, do you want some coffee or something? I've forgotten every bit of my manners.
Just sit. You're dealing with a lot. Frankly, I don't know how you're dealing with it all. I want to help you. That's my job. The offer for the furniture is too low. Let me make a counteroffer. There's nothing wrong with a bargain, Shelby, but I don't like feeling you're getting taken advantage of, even though it's ugly furniture.
Oh!
Something inside Shelby just lit up, like vindication.
Do you think so, too? Really?
Just about every piece of it, except Callie's room.
Shelby let out a laugh that, to her shock, turned to weeping in a finger snap.
I'm sorry. God, I'm sorry.
Mama?
Callie crawled into her lap.
Don't cry, Mama. Don't cry.
I'm all right.
She clutched Callie, rocked.
I'm okay. I'm just tired.
Mama needs a nap.
I'm okay. I'm okay, baby. Don't worry.
I'm going to pour you a glass of wine, Donna announced, and dug tissues from her pocket.
You sit. I saw a bottle in the fridge.
It's kind of early.
Not today, it isn't.
Now, tell me, she continued as she went to get a glass.
What else do you want to sell?
The art?
Oh my God, yes.
Worn to the bone, she let Callie pat a tissue over her face.
It's on my list to see about. I don't understand paintings like all these.
Rugs? Lamps?
I've packed up everything I want out of here, except for Callie's room and my clothes, and a few things I need to keep around while we're living here. I don't want any of it, Mrs. Donna. Even the dishes aren't mine.
There's quite a wine collection downstairs.
I've put 24 bottles online. This site I found? People are already bidding. I'm going to put another dozen on tonight.
Donna angled her head, gave Shelby what Shelby thought of as an appraisal.
Aren't you clever?
If I was clever, I wouldn't be in this fix.
Thank you, she added when Donna gave her the wine. I don't think that's true, but let's start where we are. Can you give me the name of the company you have coming in about the furniture?
It's Dolby and Sons, out of Philadelphia.
Good. That's good, and exactly who I'd recommend.
Sipping wine, Donna made notes on her tablet, spoke briskly. I'll make a counteroffer, but this buyer is going to have to come up to reality if she's serious about the master bedroom furniture. Otherwise, Chad Dolby, that's the oldest son, and he's probably the one who'll come in to give you a price, will make a fair offer. I know someone who would give you another price on your dishes, glassware, barware, and there are two art dealers I'd recommend for purchasing your art.
I don't know how to thank you.
It's my job, Donna reminded her, and it's a pleasure. I have a daughter just a couple years younger than you. I'd hope someone would help her out if she ever found herself in this kind of fix.
I noticed you'd cleaned out your husband's closet.
I did. Mom was fine, baby.
She kissed Callie's hair.
You go ahead and play now.
I took most of it into Second Chances, she told Donna when Callie slid off her lap.
Perfect. Macy and Cheryl are very good at what they do, and their store gets a lot of traffic.
Do you know everyone?
That's part of the job.
How about the books?
I packed up my books, the ones I like. Richard bought the ones left in the library. He just bought them, what was it, in a lot?
And we'll sell them the same way,
Donna nodded, tapped on her tablet.
I'm going to add that to my notes. And if it's what you want, I'm going to put some of the contacts I have in touch with you. You can set up appointments.
That would be wonderful. I would appreciate that so much. It feels like I've been stumbling around, trying to figure out what to do with what for so long now.
From what